Alright, so you should, if you don't already, have a sheet there. I'll let you go ahead and fill that out while I'm talking. Just a little fun pop quiz. I won't turn it into the the guy watching us. As you fill yours out, I'm going to just go through it real quick so we can think about this. A little test of our Bible knowledge. So, on your sheet, the first question you'll see is, what kind of fruit did Adam and Eve eat in the garden? So I want everybody to do this, so don't just lay it to the side, because this is be part of the class. So it'll be fun to kind of go through this. I appreciate it. Question number two. What took Elijah up to heaven? Okay, so you think back, just put what you think. Do not cheat and go to the Bible.
Oh, okay. No, I just picked the one. My answer.
Okay. No, I should have made that up front. So.
Yes, sir.
You know, no open book quizzes in this class.
Okay.
Who was the uncle of Esther? Okay. Just best guess. You know, turn it in. Who was the wife of Samson? Who cut Samson's hair? Okay. Who told Joseph and Mary there was no room at the inn? How many wise men came to visit Jesus? How many gifts did they bring? How old was Jesus when the wise men visited? Where did they visit him? Who was the apostle that doubted? Which apostle touched the nail prints and signs of Jesus? I think that's the last one. Give you just a second. Finish those questions. Just quick answers, whatever you whatever pops in your head. I won't call on you, I promise. So you won't have to tell everybody what you wrote. All right.
I want to answer number four so I can tell Regina where I learned it.
I'll give you a couple more seconds to fill that out. For those on at home watching us, you can do your own answers there. All right, you can continue to fill them out as we go. Be honest. Don't look in the Bible. We'll do that together. All right, so a few questions here. I thought this would be a fun activity for us. I saw something about this week, and you may be surprised at the answers we get. So, you ever heard of the Nelson Mandela effect? Some of us probably have. The Mandela effect comes from this idea. It was coined that about Nelson Mandela, and I'll tell you why in just a second, but it's sometimes mistakenly called the Mandela effect. It refers to a phenomenon where a large group of people or groups of people remember an event, fact, or detail differently from how it occurred. And the reason it's called the Nelson Mandela effect is because I don't know if you remember this, but Nelson Mandela was in prison for 27 years in South Africa. And he had spoken against the apartheid system they had there, and so he was a political prisoner. Well, he he was imprisoned in the 1980s. I'm sorry, no, it's before that. I don't remember the year. See, it would have been 73. I think he was imprisoned in 73. But what had surprised people was in 1990, he was released from prison. And a lot of people at the time, some of you may remember this, were kind of shocked. Not shocked that he was released, but shocked that he was alive. It had become kind of common thought that he had died in prison. He didn't. He was actually released in 1990. He did not pass away until 2013. And so this phrase, the Nelson Mandela effect, was coined because of what had happened to him. But he's not the only example of the Mandela effect. I'm going to give you a couple others that are kind of interesting. So you remember as children reading about those bears? There was Papa Bear, Mama Bear.
Yeah.
Remember all those? Did you remember correctly that they were not called the Berenstain Bears? They were called the Berenstain Bears. You can go back and look. It's Stain, not Steam. What about Star Wars? That famous line where Darth Vader says to Luke, I am your father. Never happened. The line was never said. The line actually was, no, I am your father. And over time that had gotten switched around. What about this one? Snow White. What does the queen, the evil queen, say to the mirror? Well, I bet many of us have heard, mirror, mirror on the wall. It's not what she says. She says, magic mirror on the wall. Instead of mirror, mirror. What about Looney Tunes? You remember that popular cartoon series?
Before my time.
How do you spell tunes?
T-O-O-N-S.
Nope. It's T-U-N-E-S. Looney Tunes. Like.
What was the comic?
Huh?
What was the cartoon?
Looney Tunes.
Oh.
Looney Tunes. I'm not talking loud. This one,
I thought it said Louie.
What about this one? Febreze. Some of us buy Febreze for our homes. How do you spell Febreze?
How
many E's do you put in there?
B-R-E-Z-E.
It's not four E's. It's just three. There is no middle double E that often gets put in there. So it's Febreze. What about the Monopoly Man? Does he have a monocle? Does he have a monocle? Is the eyepiece?
He's holding.
Nope, he is not. He does not have a monocle, has never had one. In the history of the game, he's never had a monocle. Some people believe what's happened is people have taken the peanut guy and transposed the two, but he's never had a monocle. And then one last one. And this one got me because forever I would have sworn this was true. Fruit of a Loom, underwear. Is there a Capricorn? Or, sorry, not Capricorn. A cornucopia. You know what cornucopia is? It's that horn shaped thing where the fruit spills out of it.
It's a no, but it's a yes.
There is no. Cornucopia. I would have gone to my grave believing that had I not discovered it. There is no cornucopia. There's no form of fruit spilling out of it. It's just fruit. And so some of those may have tricked you up, may have gotten you. This morning, though, the question I guess you could guess I'm going to ask is, are there any biblical examples of the Mandela effect? Well, there is. There's a lot. I narrowed it down to a few. I don't know if we'll get through them all, but we'll get to as many as I can get to. So let's go to our questions. Our first question, I'll get this thing moving forward. What kind of fruit did Adam and Eve eat in the garden? Now, it's commonly thought that many people believe it's an apple. And that's become believed over time. But, hold on. So let's go to Genesis chapter 2. Let's see what the scripture actually says. What kind of fruit was it? So in Genesis chapter 2 and verse 9, the text reads, this is English Standard text, "And out of the ground the Lord God made to spring up every tree that is pleasant to the sight and good for food. The tree of life was in the midst or middle of the garden, and the tree of knowledge of good and evil." So in chapter 2, verse 9, it talks anything about the fruit. It just talks about the trees and it labels what they are. There are two of them. Amongst many other trees, by the way, but those two we focus on. And so there's no mention of a fruit there. If you go one chapter over, we get into the temptation of Satan to Eve. And we start at verse 1. The text says, "Now the serpent was more crafty than any other beast of the field that the Lord had made. He said to the woman," did God actually say, "you shall not eat of any tree of the garden?" "And the woman said to the serpent, 'We may eat of the fruit of the trees in the garden.' But God said, 'You shall not eat of the fruit of the tree that is in the midst of the garden, neither shall you touch it, lest you die.' But the serpent said to the woman, 'You will not surely die. For God knows when you eat of it, your eyes will be open, and you will be like God, knowing good and evil.' So when the woman saw that the tree was good for food, and that it was a delight to the eyes, and that the tree was desired to make one wise, she took of its fruit and ate. And she also gave to her husband who was with her, and he ate." So, not one time is the fruit actually identified. Lots of fruits in our world, but for some reason, the apple is the one that's been assigned there by many. And maybe it has something to do with the famous paintings of that event. You often see an apple in those paintings. What is interesting is apple is actually found 11 times in the Bible, but not once in any reference to these events. So, what kind of fruit? Just fruit. I don't know what it looked like. I don't know what it tasted like. I know what it was there for. One was to give life. The other was to give knowledge of good and evil. But neither, in neither of the texts is it identifying the type of fruit that it was. So, what about this one? This is one I guess I didn't struggle with this one. I think I've always known this one. But I can see, and when you read the text, you can see why there's some confusion. But did anybody write what took Elijah up into heaven? Anybody write a chariot of fire? That's what a lot of people believe. What does the Bible actually say? Well, let's go to 2 Kings chapter 2. We'll read what actually happened. 2 Kings chapter 2, verse 1. Now I'm going to skip through some of the verses just for time's sake. But this is when Elijah is about to be taken up by God, and he's basically giving his mantle to Elisha. And Elisha's going to do much of what Elijah was doing. Verse 1 says, "Now when the Lord was about to take Elijah up to heaven by a whirlwind," so you might want to underline that, "Elijah and Elisha were on their way from Gilgal." Right, so that's, first little note there is is he notes that he's going to be taken up how? By a whirlwind. You keep reading, go down to verse 6. They've been traveling, and Elisha's wanting to stay with Elijah through all of this. Verse 6, then Elijah said to him, please stay here, for the Lord has sent me to the Jordan. So he's about to cross the Jordan. But he said, Elisha said, as the Lord lives and as you live, I will not leave you. So the two of them went on, 50 men of the sons of the prophets also, and stood at some distance from them. But as they both were standing by the Jordan, then Elisha took his cloak, rolled it up, and struck the water. The water was parted to the one side and to the other, till the two of them could go over on dry ground. All right, and then verse 9. When they had crossed, Elisha said to Elisha, ask what I shall do for you before I am taken from you. And Elisha said, please let there be a double portion of your spirit on me. And he said, Elijah said, you have asked a hard thing, yet if you see me as I'm being taken from you, it shall be so for you. But if you do not see me, it shall not be so. And then verse 11, this is key. And they, and as they still went on and talked, behold, chariots of fire and horses of fire separated the two of them. What did they do? They separated the two of them. And Elijah went up by a whirlwind into heaven. So you can see how you could easily look at that and cross yourself up. But what actually took Elijah was not the chariots of fire, but it was the whirlwind. And he was taken up and was seen no more, if you keep reading that verse. So, what took Elijah up to heaven?
The whirlwind.
All right. And what about this next one? I bet most of you got a good answer for this one. Who was the uncle of Esther? All right, so let's go and read it. Let's turn over to Esther chapter 2. Esther chapter 2. And let's go to verse 5. This one got me. I was guilty of this. And some of you are. This is Esther 2:5. Now there was a Jew in Susa, the citadel, whose name was Mordecai, the son of Jair, son of Simei, son of Kish, a Benjamite. All right, so Mordecai, the son of Jair. Right, that's probably what most of you wrote down. But notice verse 6. Who had been carried away from Jerusalem among the captives and carried away with Jehoiachin, king of Judah, whom Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, had carried away. He was bringing up who?
Hadassah,
that is Esther, the daughter of his uncle. His uncle. How were they related to one another? Now, I know sometimes relational words can be used different ways. But in this way, the Bible is very clear at their relationship. Mordecai was not her uncle. He was her cousin. Jair and Esther's father were brothers. So, who was her uncle? Her uncle was Jair. Mordecai's her cousin. Mordecai's the one that raises her. All right. What about this one? This is a good one. I like this one. Who was the wife of Samson who cut Samson's hair? Now, how many people wrote Delilah? Go ahead and admit it. You can raise your hand. I'm not going to call you out. We don't have a video on you. How many wrote Delilah? Let's see. Let's go to Judges chapter 16. Judges chapter 16. Verse 4. This is what the English Standard says. Judges 16:4. After this, he, Samson, loved a woman in the valley of Sorek, whose name was Delilah. The Bible never says they were married. All it ever says is that he loved a woman. We don't know if they were ever married. Now, is it possible they were married? Possible, but we're reading in the text to get that. All it says is he loved a woman. Now, we know he was married to another woman, but is she his wife? I don't know. Maybe, but we can't be definitive about that. We always make an assumption. Who cut his hair, though? Delilah cut it, right? When she put him to sleep. Well, let's see what happened. All right, so if you go back and read, I won't read all this. This is great drama here. If you read 16:5 and following, you remember she's been asked by the lords of the Philistines to help to capture Samson, to find his secret out. And you remember Samson, she's offered 1,100 pieces of silver, a big prize, to find this out. Well, he goes to her, she comes to him in 7, and, first he says, if you bind me with 7 fresh bowstrings that have not been dried, then I shall become weak. And she does that and finds out, no, he was just lying to you. Now, you would have thought at that point, the rest of the Bible would say, and then Samson left Delilah, never saw her again. Wouldn't you assume that was the case? That's not what happens. He plays around with her. Again, she asked him in verses 10 through 12. There he says, if you take new ropes that have not been used, I'll become weak like any other man. Again, not true. She comes to him a third time in verse 13. She says, up until now you've mocked me. Tell me how your might might be bound. And then he says, if you weave 7 locks of my hair, with the web, and fasten it tight with the pin, then I shall become weak and be like any other man. And again, that doesn't work out. So this is the fourth time. The fourth time in verse 15, she comes back to him. She's upset. I don't know why he's not upset, but he's not. But verse 16 says, and when she pressed him hard with her words, day after day, and urged him, his soul was vexed to death. Oh, how terrible. Like, what is he doing? He finally tells her. Verse 17, he told her all his heart and said to her, a razor's never come upon my head, for I have been a Nazarite to God from my mother's womb. If you shave my head, then my strength will leave me, and I shall become weak and be like any other man. Verse 18, when Delilah saw that he had told her all his heart, she went and called for the lords of the Philistines, saying, come up again, for he has told me all his heart. Then the lords of the Philistines came up to her and brought the money in their hands. Now notice, she made him sleep on her knees, and she called a man and had him shave off the 7 locks of his head. Who cut his hair? A man did. I don't know who. I assume it's a Philistine, but maybe not. It was not her. So, commonly thought to be Delilah. No, she just put him, she found his secret and then told and then put him to sleep somehow and then had somebody cut his hair off.
So would the last servant be a good answer?
Yeah, you can put that.
Okay. I'm going to put man.
All right. What about this next one? This is one where there are several when we talk about the birth of Jesus. A lot of misconceptions have come up. This is one I didn't even realize until I was doing this. It's one. Who told Joseph and Mary there was no room at the inn? Who told them that?
The innkeeper's wife.
The innkeeper. The innkeeper's wife?
Yeah.
Okay. All right, let's read the text. Let's see what it says. Luke is the one that tells us this one. Luke chapter 2. And I, again, for time's sake, I need to go forward. So I'm actually going to look at just verse 7. So they have come to Bethlehem, and Mary is about to give birth. And so this is verse 7. And she gave birth to her firstborn son and wrapped him in swaddling clothes and laid him in a manger because there was no place for them in the inn. Nobody ever tells them that. It's as far as Scripture goes. Could it have happened? Absolutely. But that is complete supposition on our part. We don't know how they found out there was no room at the inn. It just simply tells us there was no room at the inn. One that's easily confused and is quite often.
I believe there's some Christmas cards that's misguided me.
Yeah. What about this one? You've heard this one probably recently, so you probably got this one right. But how many wise men came to visit Jesus, and how many gifts did they bring? How many wise men?
Three.
That's a pretty common answer, right? Three. How many gifts?
Three.
At least.
Okay. All right. So let's read it. Again, I won't read this whole section, but this section will actually answer a few questions in a row for us here. Let's go to Matthew chapter 2, verse 1. This is what's said about the Magi, the wise men. Verse 1 says, this is Matthew 2, verse 1. Now, after Jesus was born, you might note that word for later. For later in another question. But just notice verse 1. After Jesus was born in Bethlehem of Judea in the days of Herod the king, wise men from the east came to Jerusalem. A number is never put on the wise men. The only thing we know is there is a plurality. There had to be more than one. Was there two? Was there three? Was there 15? We have no idea. All it says are wise men. Never identifies the number. That's become popular in quote unquote nativity scenes. But it's not something we take from the Bible. The Bible never defines the number. It only says who. What about how many gifts they bring? All right, if you drop down in the same text, verse 11, let's read verse 11. And going into the house, they saw the child, keep that in mind for a minute, with Mary his mother. They fell down and worshipped him, opening their treasures. They offered him gifts, gold and frankincense and myrrh. And this is one that tripped me up, because I've always thought there's three gifts. We don't know how many bags of gold they brought. We don't know how many pieces they brought to him. We assume, I think, that it's three. Like one guy had, because we put three and three together, one of them had gold, one of them had frankincense, one had myrrh. But that's reading into the text. It's not there. We don't know how much of any quantities there was of each of the gifts. All it says are gifts, plural. This one has a lot in it. So let's go to the next question. We're going to stay right here in Matthew 2. How old was Jesus when the wise men visited, and where did they visit him? So, what would be the common answer, since y'all probably already catching on here, what would be the common answer for most? Well, when he was born, right? They came to him, you know, he's in the manger when they come to see him. Well, you're probably there with me already. But looking at the text, in verse 8, well, let's look at verse 1. Notice that again. Now, after Jesus was born, so we're not given a time frame exactly, but it's after his birth that the wise men come to the king. That's just when they get to the king. We don't know how long after. Now, I can give you kind of a guess of how old I think Jesus was, but it's a guess. But he's not newborn. Notice when they come, King Herod's words in verse 8. He says to them, go and search diligently for the child, not babe, child. That's a clue that maybe some translations might even have young child there. Later in verse 9, again, the child, they come to where the child was, and they saw the star, they rejoiced exceedingly with great joy. And going into the house, they saw the child with with Mary, his mother. Okay? Remember that one for the second part of that question, the house. They fell down, worshiped him, opening their treasures. They offered him. If he's a newborn baby, are you going to go and say, hey, baby, here you go. I got some frankincense and some myrrh and some gold. You're going to give it to mom, right? I brought these for your child. But it says they offered him those things. Now, how old is Jesus? If you drop down to verse 16, there's probably a clue here. Again, we can't be exacting. We don't want to commit the same error. But verse 16, the text says, then Herod, when he saw that he had been tricked by the wise men, became furious, and he sent and killed all the male children in Bethlehem. Remember that again for where they visit him. And all that region who were 2 years old and under. So it's likely he was around that 2-year-old mark. What about the second part of the question? Where did they visit him? They didn't come to the stable where he was. They came to his home. Where? In Bethlehem. Wherever he was staying at the time was a home. So, sometime later. All right. Rephrase what I just said. It calls out Bethlehem here. We don't know that necessarily he was in Bethlehem at the time. He may have been back in Nazareth. All it says is that Herod started at Bethlehem. So I don't want to cross wires there either. So Jesus could have been in Bethlehem still, or he might have been back in Nazareth. So make sure of that. So that answers those two questions. We can see how there's a little confusion there. All right, now, what about one last one? This last one. And then I want to make an application. All right, what about this one? Who was the apostle that doubted? Now, this one's easy, right?
Yes.
And touched the nail prints in the side of Jesus. Who was the apostle that doubted? I mean, he wrote Thomas. I bet most of you did. Go ahead and raise your hand. It's okay. It's all right. And even if you just thought it, you didn't write it down. It's all right. Let's go to John chapter 20. And I've got to go quick here if I'm going to get to my ending. This is John 20 and verse 24. This is where most of that comes from. We'll read this text and look at is that completely true? Verse 24. Now Thomas, one of the 12, we know at this point it was actually 11 because Judas had already departed, called the twin, was not with them when Jesus came. So the other disciples said or told him, "We have seen the Lord." And he said to them, "Unless I see unless I see in his hands the marks of the nails, and place my finger into the mark of the nails, and place my hand into his side, I will never believe." 8 days later, his disciples, Jesus' disciples, were inside again. Thomas was with them. Although the doors were locked, Jesus came and stood among them and said, "Peace be with you." Then he said to Thomas, "Put your finger here and see my hands, and put out your hand and place it in my side. Do not disbelieve, but believe." Thomas answered him, "My Lord and my God." Jesus said to him, "You have believed because you have seen me, or have you believed because you've seen me? Blessed are those who have not seen and yet have believed." So that wraps it up, right? We got a nice tight bow on that. You've been paying enough attention. No, that's not the case. Did Thomas doubt? He sure did. Right? And John 20 makes that clear. But is he the only one that doubted? He gets a bad rap. And I'll show you why. Go to Mark 16. Go to the Gospel of Mark, chapter 16, and look at verse 14. Mark 16, 14. Afterward, we don't have all the details that John gives us about his many appearances with the apostles. We've got 5 minutes to get it worked out here. Afterward, he appeared to the 11. Notice that. To who? To the 11 themselves as they were reclining at table. And he what? Rebuked them, who? The 11. For their, who? The 11. For their unbelief and hardness of heart. Because they, who? The 11, did not believe those who saw him after he was risen. Who didn't believe? Thomas, but everybody else, all the other apostles. The 11 apostles all doubted, and all were rebuked for their doubt. We say doubting Thomas, but we should really reconsider. They all doubted, and be careful about labeling. Yes, ma'am.
Before you make the application, can I say one thing about something else? Mm-hmm. Okay. So, on 4... where it says, who was the wife of Samson, it was Delilah, because if you go to Judges 14, it says 14:16, and Samson's wife wept over him and said, you only hate me, you do not love me.
Well, you may be call me out of here.
But then it says, on the 15th, like on Judges 14:15, on the fourth day, they said to Samson's wife, and maybe wife isn't supposed to be there.
Okay, so I haven't looked that up. The English Standard does not read in the same way. Yeah. So I need to look at to see if there's a issue there.
Mine says that in the English Standard.
So let me look at it. Yours says wife. What verse?
15. So I think the tricky part was who cut his hair, because I thought that was Delilah, but it wasn't.
Let me look up the wife thing, because that'd be interesting if that's the case. I will have to apologize that I got that wrong. So you said Judges
14.
Judges 14:15. Okay, I was looking at the chapter.
But wasn't that the riddle about the Adam the eater came to Samson? I don't think that's
Yeah. So he hasn't met Delilah at that point. He doesn't meet Delilah. Thank you, Becky. Got me worried there a minute. That's his actual wife. That's not Delilah. He does not meet Delilah until chapter 16.
Oh. Okay.
So who was his actual wife?
The woman of Timnah.
I don't think she's ever named. I think she's just called daughter. See, daughter of Timnah. I have to look. I don't think there's a name given for her, but she's his wife in Judges 14. But Delilah doesn't come into the picture until chapter 16.
So they try to this one. They try to get her to tell them too, because this one they say entice your husband to tell us what the riddle is.
Yes.
You know what I mean? So they want this wife.
Yes.
To tell them things too.
And he'll go back out in 15 and defeat them again.
Okay.
But it's not until 16, until we get to Delilah. So I will still hold to my thing about Delilah. No, it's okay. I'm glad you did that. You got me nervous there for a second.
Samson has made a lot of bad decisions, because then he gets with that harlot in the first part of chapter 16.
Yeah.
And then he doesn't talk about it until Delilah until later in 16.
So I got to end this real quick. Last question here. Which apostle touched the nail prints in Jesus' side? There is reason to believe from Luke 24 that it was actually the other apostles did. I'm going to read this real quick. I know we don't have any time, but Luke 24, verse 40. Luke 24, verse 40. When they had said this, he showed them his hands and his feet. And while they still disbelieved for joy and were marveling, he said to them, have you eaten anything here? So it's that word show is a little bit vague, so we can't say with definitiveness. But at least In the case of Thomas, he never asked to even look at the hands of Jesus and the side. Once he sees Jesus in John 20, he just simply says, "My Lord and my God." And he falls down before Jesus. The other disciples were shown the scars, the impression, and still what? Disbelieved.
Well, but he says to Thomas, put your finger here and see my hands. And
yeah.
Put your hand and place it in my side.
But we're never told he does that. That's just
no,
Jesus.
He showed it to Thomas too, though.
I'm just saying Thomas never had to actually touch. He said, I'll never believe unless I can touch. Yeah. And so sometimes we ascribe Thomas that.
Yeah.
And there's no indication he ever had to do that. And so Jesus not only did that with Thomas, but he did it with the others as well. And yet they still disbelieved. They still struggled. So, why do we bring all this up? We have to be careful. I think these examples show us that we can easily misconstrue things. Now, some things it's not a big deal. Right? Think about who said there's no room at the inn. At the end of the day, if I mess that up, no big deal. But there are other things, significant things, that people can confuse, and they do, and they get wrong, they misinterpret, misunderstand. And so we're reminded of 2 Timothy 2:15. I know I'm out of time. But Paul said, do your best to present yourself to God as one approved. Some translations have studied to show thyself approved. So the idea of being a good disciple, a student of the Word of God. He says, a worker who has no need to be ashamed, rightly handling or dividing the word of truth. It's important that we take Bible interpretation, Bible reading seriously. making sure what we understand is actually the truth. Just because an idea is believed by the many does not make it true. Truth is true and stands on its own. Thank you all for paying attention and taking part. Next week, I think Steve will be here. Thank you all.